If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps is for you. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on...
on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space! And I'm about to die!
We need an opening.
Found one!
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, we got TIE Fighters, we got Imperials, we got a Top Gun school, we have Wedge, we have Hobby, and Sabine Undercover. I tell you, that's an exciting episode. Welcome to Rebels Reactions. I'm your host, Aaron Harris. This week, we are talking about the Antilles extraction. What an exciting episode, full of fun little tidbits here and there. And joining me for this week for our discussion, of course, the host of, one of the co-hosts, actually, of Comics with Kenobi, Mr. Jeff McGee. Jeff, how you doing?
Hello. I'm good. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Thank you so much for joining us. And
thanks for having me. It's been a while since I've been on this show. I think it was season one was the last time I did anything with Dan and Corey for Rebels Reactions. So before the Aaron Harris era.
Well, it's long overdue, my friend. Long overdue. So definitely welcome. Welcome back, then, we should say. And, of course, joining us also making his return to Rebels Reactions for the second week in a row, Mr. Tommy Mack. Tommy, how you doing?
Howdy. Awesome, awesome. Glad to be back. I did not think I was going to be back this quick, but I go where the will of the Force directs me.
Yes, and the will was definitely in motion this week, so I appreciate you guys jumping in and helping out. A little background. We had a hurricane down where I live. Guys that were supposed to be recording with me, unfortunately, at work clogged, and these guys were an awesome help jumping in for tonight. Unplanned, unexpected. So this will be a great episode. So.
Absolutely. Glad to jump in and just a pause in saying, you know, we hope everyone out there who had to deal with the storm, our thoughts are with them, and that things are not as terrible as it seems for some of them out there. So
our thoughts go out to everybody who's been affected by Hurricane Matthew, and definitely we wish everybody the best, and hopefully it's a quick rebuild and recovery time for everybody. So, and the waters recede, a lot of flooding. So, but Hurricane Matthew couldn't keep Rebels away. And I tell you, the Antilles extraction was just a fun, all-around exciting episode. We had, of course, a great episode where we see the Rebel in dire need of some new pilots when we see the return of Fulcrum feeding the information, some information to our Rebels to pick up some new Rebel Imperial cadets at a flight school who want to defect because they are done with the Empire. So Sabine goes undercover and infiltrates the academy, and it's where we meet Wedge and Hobby. And of course, those names should sound very familiar to everybody if you've ever watched the original trilogy. If you haven't watched the original trilogy,
yeah, we all had that watch. Moment, I'm sure.
Would that have helped this make more sense to me had I seen the original trilogy? Because I was lost. I'm kidding.
That I know better, Jeff. So, but Wedge and we see Wedge and Hobby introduced in this episode. We see, of course, them being hunted down by Imperials. You know there's going to be some defecting. And, of course, they make their big escape. with the help of an unlikely ally in Agent Callus, actually. So we see some links to previous episodes from last season in that, but a lot of great things going on. So let's go ahead and jump right in. Of course, we are looking at Sabine Wren. We had a Sabine-focused episode. Of course, anytime we get a little Mandalorian action is always a good thing. And we got Sabine going on undercover to Sky Strike Academy, which is apparently the top gun of the Empire. So, great, phenomenal setting there. I love it. Just obviously the Empire likes places in the clouds. Did you notice that?
I did. For a second, I thought they were on Bespin. Exactly. Every time they cut to the exterior, I loved that very serene looking orange sky with the twin suns. It's gorgeous.
Oh, they did a great job of that. It was very, very, very cinematic, very pretty, very striking, and very reminiscent, of course, Bespin. So we got Bespin. We got the factory place. I just forgot the name of it from the pilot where they stole the. Or if not from the pilot, but from the season premiere where they stole the Y-Wings. And now we got Sky Strike Base Academy all up in the clouds. So obviously they like hovering somewhere. Or if that, or they just like people to look up at them, which is probably what it is.
Well, you would think from a military standpoint that a base, situated in the upper atmosphere is harder to strike at for civilians of the planet anyway, they'd have to have some kind of air force to strike at them. So it does limit options there. If they were, indigenous, people to that planet that were not quite happy with the Empire's presence there, that it kind of does provide a shield for them of seclusion.
Exactly. And it definitely keeps them out of reach from the ground, for sure. Civilian populations would definitely have a hard time reaching this academy. But definitely we learned that this is the best of the best at this school. And they are training to be even better than what they are. And very much in correlation to what we saw in that great 80s movie, Top Gun. I mean, if this wasn't a Top Gun nod, I don't know what ever could be.
The only thing we were missing was Ghost Rider giving us a flyby.
You know, that would have been perfect. But we do get a Tom Skerritt lookalike, don't we? In one of the flight instructors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
I did not make that connection.
Oh, yeah. We got the Tom Skerritt lookalike. Matter of fact, they even named him after Tom Skerritt.
Skerritt.
Skerris, yes. They named him.
Yeah. Skerris, okay.
Yep. Vault.
Although
Skerris,
I thought it was kind of literal, the name of Skerris, as in scare us.
Basically,
yeah, that's where I went with it as well.
Yeah, you could take it that way, absolutely. That's what it sounds like. But if you actually look at the name, it looks just like Skerritt, and they just replaced the last letter. It's literally all they did. It's great. I love it. So we got definitely that nod to that Top Gun movie. And obviously, I mean, it was a huge movie during the 80s. So definitely, if you're going to do a flight school, why not model it after give a nod to a popular movie? Why not? We've learned Dave Filoni likes giving nods to things.
And, in the one of the cut scenes that wound up on the editing floor was the space volleyball scene.
Riding around town on the hover bike?
Yeah.
I just wanted to see Sabine. We're going there. So I just want to see. Just wanted to see Sabine and Hobby, or Sabine and Wedge, do a rendition of That Love and Feeling. But I guess you can't get everything we wish for, can we?
Nah. In space, no one can hear you karaoke.
For some people, that would be a good thing.
See, all the jokes I'm coming up with are just completely inappropriate, so I'm keeping my mouth shut.
On behalf of Dan and Corey,
family
thank you.
Podcast, family podcast.
Exactly. I'm hamstrung.
Oh, but we have Sabine, of course, interacting with the cadets, and of course with the leadership there at Sky Strike. when she gets there, of course, we find out before she goes AP5, of course, created her some fake credentials so she could infiltrate. And, of course, she was chosen for this mission because she was the, quote, Hera, the least recognizable of our rebel group.
Plus, she had also been a cadet at one point as well.
Exactly.
So, and can I just ask a question? Are we coming to the end of Ezra wanting to do everything himself and thinking he's the best candidate for every job? Because we've had it seems like every episode this season, and it's kind of getting on my nerves. You know, I realize this is part of his growth, but really?
Well, you know, and that comes up in this episode too, because he wanted to go and do this mission, and they told him no, he's too recognizable. This definitely is Sabine. Plus, she was a former academy student, former cadet. And of course, we see Ezra actually dealing with that through the whole episode, because he's wanting to, he's not happy that Sabine's down there by herself and he's out of contact. He's basically not in control. And I think that's what it comes down to with Ezra, because, you know, over the past several episodes, he's been dealing with being in control and protecting his friends. So they don't repeat the same fate as what happened to Ahsoka, or whatever that fate may be. And of course, he doesn't want to see him hurt again, like Kanan. So he's dealing with that. Tommy?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say Kanan had a successful Master Padawan moment there in teaching Ezra some patience, because he did actually manage to keep Ezra in line this episode. I was kind of waiting for, you know, Ezra to stow away on the ship or go off and do something on his own, you know, off the cuff again. And he did actually, you know, Kanan did manage to rein Ezra in and tell him, look, there is nothing you can do. This is one of the lessons you have to learn, is sometimes you have to sit and wait for the moment.
Exactly. And we see him learning that lesson, struggling with that lesson, because he's not, of course, when later in the episode, when they're under attack from initially trying to rescue Hobby and Wedge and Rake, who is a third cadet. And
the red shirt.
Yeah,
let's say Rake is an AKA red shirt.
We all went
there. It does start with an R, you know. We bring in Star Trek all the time. Why not?
I have to say, when they did the reveal of the young pilots there, and it was like Wedge and Hobby and Rake. Do I remember Rake? Which one was he? I don't remember him. Oh, that's why I don't remember him.
It's just a matter of which one was going to go down in flames. So, but definitely, we got those three there. And of course, when they're just kind of stranded in space and Ezra has to retreat, he's not wanting to. As a matter of fact, Kanan has to give the order to retreat because they're under such heavy bombardment. And it's something that Ezra is just not happy with. He is not happy being in a situation where he can't control things.
So that's one of the hardest things to learn in any situation, is that you can't always be in control and that you can't always affect the outcome. And it's a good lesson for him to learn.
And it's probably going to be a recurring theme throughout the rest of this this season, it seems.
Exactly. I got a feeling he's not done learning this, because this is not a lesson you can just learn overnight. It takes a
plus, he's pretty dumb. He has to learn things several times before it sinks in.
It's got to hit him upside
down. Oh, he is still a teenager.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Some people got to learn the hard way. Definitely going to be seeing him work on this. I got a feeling through the rest of the season at some point here and there, for sure.
Now I have a quick question for just to throw out there. We were talking about the whole thing that set this up with the new Fulcrum. So they were explaining how Fulcrum is a you know, pseudonym, a code name, and that there are now several people, or have been, I suppose, several people that have used this name throughout. But when this new Fulcrum was transmitting to them, I don't know, my first thought was kind of like, I don't trust them. Like, I'm assuming, I guess, that they know who these agents are, but are they, like, where do they actually find these? Did they explain, like, these are double agents, or these are infiltrated rebel spies?
Well, the only explanation we really got was that all of their informants used the name Fulcrum, and it was an Ahsoka idea. That was the extent of the explanation. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to pull back around to Fulcrum, because when Fulcrum, I mean, when they first see that logo, before you hear the voice start talking, everybody kind of just reverts back. Oh my God, Ahsoka's back. But if we learn it, she's not. We got a whole network of spies just simply called Fulcrum at this point, who are feeding these people information.
Okay, so this is, it's a network of rebel spies then. Is that, that's where the Fulcrum comes in, and it was set up by Ahsoka. You'll have to forgive me. Sometimes I play catch up a little bit with some of it.
Yeah, that's how I took it, is they have a group of spies, and there are several who have the designation who are, you know, performing certain functions, and we assume that they're all trustables. But I'm with you, Tommy. As soon as he started talking, I thought, I don't think I trust that voice, because it sounded like that really digitized witness protection,
right,
voice that we hear all the time.
It was just my first instinct of like, yeah, it sounds like, is this a trustworthy source or is it not? I mean, I suppose it's an interesting idea they could explore as it plays out. But
well, I'll tell you right off the bat, as soon as I heard that voice start talking in that digitized, deep, it sounded a very male voice. As soon as I heard it, I immediately jumped to one place, who I assumed it was. And to me, it sounded like Callus right off the bat.
That's an interesting, yeah. Okay, I was going to go there a little later with Callus, but yeah.
No, and we'll go ahead and go there now, because I jumped there immediately, and here's why. At the end, and during last season, during the episode The Honorable Ones, when we see Callus and Zeb trapped on that planet, and the amount of mutual respect the two started gaining for each other through that survival process. And then at the end of that episode, when we see, at the end of the episode, we see Callus watching as the Zeb joins the Ghost crew again, and they're all happy to see him, and they're hugging him, and they're
the camaraderie.
The camaraderie is there. He is home. He is back with his family. Then we cut back to a scene to Callus back with the Empire, and he goes walking through a door, and there's Admiral Constantine. He's like, "Oh, Callus, you're back. Carry on," and just walks off. No greetings, right. No how you doing, no nothing.
Very cold, very
exactly.
Yeah,
very.
They
cold.
Could have cared. They really could have cared less whether he lived or died.
Exactly. And if you what wasn't in that episode, which did wind up on the cutting room floor, is in that episode. And if you go back through, I believe it was through the trivia gallery, that episode was supposed to include a scene where Callus was rescued. It wasn't even rescued by the Empire. He was rescued by pirates, who then turned him back over to the Empire.
Huh.
So the Empire didn't even care enough to search for him. So you see that mental game start playing at the end of that episode when he goes into his quarters and he sits there. He has the rock that they used for warmth, that him and Zeb used for warmth with him, almost like a memento at that point. And he just sits there, and you could see him start to rethink his life. And I called it at that point. I was like, I said it in the episode when we recorded it. I think he'll wind up being a turncoat at some point. He's going to join the rebellion. So when I heard Fulcrum at the beginning of this episode, at that point, I was like, you know what? That has to be Callus. It sounds just like him, just digitized. Then we get
that. Now I'm going to have to go back and re-listen. Because,
yeah, I'll buy it.
That would be very – I can see it. I can see it.
Oh, yeah. It's very it, – it would play along into the character that they started – the character right. growth they pushed him in that
right. and well they give us and since we're jumping all over with the episode, obviously they give us the reveal at the end there that Callus is the one that lets them get free, and you know he basically just says, you know, tells them, you know, the favor's returned, or however he worded it. And that was an interesting enough spin, because we were waiting to see where they were going to go with Callus, whether he was going to be affected by that, or whether he was going to, you know, like you said, at the end of that particular episode you were talking about, we see Callus sitting there rethinking his life. Well, they haven't really addressed that till now. Where did he go with that thought process? Did he just revert back, or was he truly affected by that encounter? And it appears he was, at least enough to let Sabine and you know, those guys go. So there's that in itself of him making that turn of he's already become a traitor. He's already mm-hmm. turned against the Empire by letting them go. Did he take it a step further and he's feeding the rebellion information? That's a really interesting idea.
Well, look at how the Empire is treating him too. Not just from that at the end of that episode. Look at how he was treated in this episode. You remember when season one came out and we first were introduced to Kallus, people cowered when Kallus walked into a room. There was fear because of what he stood for and who he was and the reputation he had. And now you look at him, he's falling behind, of course, Governor Price. He's getting cut down with little shots from Price. And of course, they don't trust him to be able to complete the task. I mean, after starting the investigation at Skystrike, when he's reporting back to Governor Price, he goes, "I can't find any indication of any rebel activity, any traitors." And he goes, "What?" And then she almost expected that answer from him, and that's why she put a second plan in place, and almost really had a dig at him at that point without actually even saying something. And then, of course, it just plays out through there. Nobody really trusts him. I mean, even Sabine, when she's captured, as he's walking out, she takes a shot at him, and it's like, well, at least now they found somebody that can do your job.
Right.
And that's why I didn't think about all of that when I was watching the episode. But when he did let them go at the end and he said, you know, this is tell Zeb we're even, I thought that it sort of served two purposes. One, it evened the decks between them, cleared the decks, I should say. But it also undermined the governor as well. And I thought he was sort of killing two birds with one stone in that regard as well. So even if you don't look at it from that standpoint, from that point of view, it's still not completely out of character for him, because we know the Imperials are not the most loyal of individuals.
Yeah, and I get where you're going. Even if he's not completely sympathetic with the rebellion at this point, he's throwing a little egg in the face of I just drew a blank on her name, and you just said
Governor Price.
Governor Price, thank you. Yeah, a little egg in her face of like, well, you know, yeah, I failed some missions, but you're going to fail this one too. So,
yeah, it very well could be. It very well. I mean, there's so many ways his actions can be interpreted at this point, and we're not really sure where he's going to drift or where his ship is going to sail to. So, I think we got a very interesting story ahead of us when it comes to Kallus, because I mean I don't think we're definitely done with him, and my prediction is by the end of the series we're going to see him in a more rebellious state than what we've seen. My prediction, just how I run with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of agree with you, because I've noticed it's happened with a lot of the characters on this show, but Kallus started out as a very one-dimensional, you know, the Imperial officer and, you know, the hard case. And as you said, you know, the guy that was respected and feared, and his mission was to bring down the rebels and all that. And here we go. We have this character development. He's not stuck in this one dimension. And yeah, it's interesting that how they develop these characters and which direction they're going to go, because we know, obviously, a lot of the rebellion is made up of defected, you know, Imperial officers, pilots, fighters. It's not just civilians. It's a lot of people who have defected from the Empire. So why not Kallus?
Exactly. Kallus is, I mean, it's going to be
Kallus
interesting. Kallus.
Kallus.
Kallus. So it'll be interesting to see where they carry him. I'm definitely looking forward to see his storyline play out. His character's been fleshed out a lot in the few episodes he's been in, so it was good to see him back again today. I can't say I was too surprised when I saw him step out to rescue Sabine and the others. Especially when he gave his whole speech. Because she stopped him. She stopped the guys. They were going to take off running. And she's like, wait, why are you doing this? Because she wanted to know why. I mean, this is somebody that she's been fighting and running from since season one, honestly. So definitely the curiosity was there. And I would have loved to have seen it, and they didn't show it. But I would have loved to have seen the look on Zeb's face when she told him that.
Right.
because you know that conversation had to happen.
It could be. They could address it at some point in the future.
I hope they do, because I definitely would like to see how that plays out. Especially, I would like to see, now that this has happened, an interaction between Zeb and Kallus again, to see how they are going to play out. Because there's a lot of mutual respect between those two now that wasn't there previously because of the episode from last season. And obviously we see that respect still there because of the actions Kallus has taken. I think he's taken any further action. They haven't told us yet. Hopefully we'll find out, though. So we'll see how that plays out in that episode. Definitely a great storyline that they have to play with there and see where they take it.
Yeah, you said you kind of saw it coming. I will say that I didn't see it coming until Kallus stepped around the corner. But as soon as he did, I went, of course. You know, it all fell into place. But I didn't, up until that moment, see it coming, like, oh, he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I didn't either. And it didn't, even after it happened, I was like, I still wasn't sure I trusted him. And then after I thought about it a little more, and that, you know, the point you guys were making all dawned on me, and I thought, oh yeah, it all makes sense. And it's, the reason it works is because, you know, Tommy, you were talking about the character development that they've done. It's been so gradual. I liken it to the character development we got with Ahsoka during the Clone Wars, because you started out first season, everybody hated her. All of a sudden, by the last season, she's become one of my favorite characters in the entire saga, and I didn't even notice.
Right.
Because they did such a good job of developing that character. And it's the same way with Kallus. All of a sudden, he's, while not necessarily a completely different person than the one we met at the beginning of the series, there's definitely been some change made and some developments made, but it's not been so overt that we saw it happening. And that's what makes it seem so real. And it's impressive. It's extremely difficult to do.
Well, when you think about, you know, some of the cartoons, at least I know the ones I would watch as a kid growing up, where the villains remained pretty much one-dimensional throughout the run of the series. It was always, you know, bad guy A chasing heroes B, scenario C, bad guy loses. It was played out the same every episode, and the villains never developed. They were just always the bad guys. Bad guys who develop and evolve, whether they become worse bad guys or they change into something else, either way, is far more interesting.
Absolutely.
It definitely is. And it just adds that level of depth to them that we like to see in our Star Wars characters. That's why I think we'll see a lot more to him as time goes on.
Absolutely.
So we got a great storyline there in this episode. Let's talk a little bit more about Sabine, because Sabine, of course, is the one that went undercover in this episode. She definitely had to tap back into her roots there from her cadet days. And of course, we see her overcoming obstacle, all kinds of obstacles while she's there. It starts as soon as she steps off the shuttle when her ID card doesn't work. We see her removing her bucket and polishing, doing the whole original Nintendo cartridge blow on the car.
I was going to say, it's a nod to the old video games and also the modern ATM card, where if you've ever stuck your ATM card in the machine and the thing doesn't work, and then you rub the magnetic strip a couple of times and stick it back in there, and it finally does kick in. Totally a nod to that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
she had put it up, she put a plastic bag over it to slip it back in. It would have been perfect.
Oh, that would have been just awesome. You pull out a little vomit bag. Here you go. Try it now. Phenomenal. I love the little throw out there in that little scene there. And you see the look. Without actually being able to see the face, you actually see the look on the stormtrooper's face, as well as the officer that's standing there, as they just kind of look at each other, confused about what she's doing, which just added to that scene.
Well, it's funny. Like I said, that was kind of just one of those humorous little moments. It's the awkward moment we all have when you're at the machine and you're trying to get your thing, and you know, everybody's just kind of standing there waiting for it to work or not work. It's like, what do you do? You know, computer technology is even in the well, I was going to say the future, but it's a long time ago. But yeah, you still get those little glitches.
Oh yes, you definitely do. Definitely do. There's always something glitching somewhere, isn't there?
Typically, it's me.
But Sabine stayed totally cool in that moment. That was the thing of, like, she didn't even, like, didn't flinch, didn't sweat it, didn't, like, oh, hang on a second, let me just, yeah, these cards, they never work. Give me a second, let me just rub a little spit on it, and here you go. Oh, there we go, we got it to work.
Yeah, and she played it perfectly cool. And they accepted the card, she goes about her business. Then we get into their simulator run, where she gets in there, and we find out afterwards it was a simulator, but we see her in a TIE fighter flying around. She waits for a wingman. Her wingman flies up and identifies himself as his call number, then goes, "But you could call me Wedge." That's our first encounter with Wedge Antilles.
And we all went, "Wedge!"
Exactly. it's like Norm walking into the bar at Cheers. Wedge! Yeah. So, but Wedge flies in. Of course, they get snipped immediately by their commandant, who tells them to only use their codes, their I was going to say U codes, which is what we call them at work, but I know that's not it. But use their identification codes, and they snap back there, and they go through their training process, and of course we see them blow up some Y-wings, which is pretty cool. Then of course they advance on a freighter, and we get to see that classic cargo ship, the vehicle that of course takes us back to Empire Strikes Back. It's the same type of ship they were using, the Rebel transport ship they were using back then in this scene. And we saw it at the beginning of the episode too, which is what triggered them to look for the pilots as that was destroyed. But we see that classic Rebel ship design come into play, and they're ordered to destroy it. Of course, they don't want to destroy it. There's no life signs. They're trying to surrender. So Sabine is questioning their orders at that point, because, you know, the protocol, she's saying protocol's this, and the commander's saying destroy it. And all of a sudden, they get report that another rebel ship's coming into the area, and it winds up being the Ghost. And the Ghost fires on them and blows up both quote unquote TIE fighters at that point, because, of course, they're in a simulation, so they're not really dead. But you can see the look and hear the panic in her voice at that point, because that's her ship, that's her home. At that point, even if it's a simulator, when your home shoots at you, you're gonna think twice.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what caused her to hesitate. But again, she did she knew she was in a simulation still, so she didn't totally give away anything of, like, you know, blurting out some information of, like, that would give her away that she was a member of that Ghost ship. But at the same point, yeah, she did. You know, it caused her to hesitate just long enough, I suppose.
Exactly, and she questioned it when she got out of there, because she's like, "What's that? That's not even that's a cargo ship. That's not even an attack vessel." And of course, she was reprimanded, and of course, corrected by our Tom Skerritt wannabe pilot as he comes walking towards them and gives him a speech on how it's been modified and how hesitation can lead to destruction, and you need to follow orders, and it's the way the Empire should be. It's all command and order.
And they set that up with the opening sequence as well, with the attack on that first supply run and the TIE fighter pilots who took out the ship, even though they were pleading, "Look, we're unarmed. You know, we surrender. You know, there's no need to destroy us." And the pilots didn't question or, you know, hesitate. They still took them out, and just showing again the ruthlessness of the Empire. There is no hesitation. You follow your orders. You take them out. There is no mercy.
Jeff? Yeah, and is it just me? This is apropos of nothing that we're talking about, but is it just me, or when you guys see ships that we saw in the original trilogy in the cartoon, do you get as excited as I do?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Every single time when I saw the carrier, I was like, oh, I know that ship. That's one of the things that I won't say hated, but one of the things that always let me down about the Clone Wars was I didn't see any of the ships that were from my Star Wars. And that's one thing I love about Rebels is I get to see the stuff, the toys that I had as a kid, basically in action, more than we got to see them in any of the films.
Yeah, we got, you know, TIE fighters and TIE bombers and TIE interceptors and all these other ships all, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was
all the old favorites are there.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. I mean, that's one thing that drew me to Rebels to begin with. That's the first thing you hear when that when the pilot started, the first thing you hear is as they're panning down toward the city on Lothal, is you hear TIE fighters, and then right. You see them. And that hum of the TIE fighter, I just went, I love this show. just from that hum of the TIE fighter, that did it for me. And then, of course, to see the Y-wings in action. We got the A-wings in action. We got the interceptors. We didn't see interceptors in the original trilogy until Return of the Jedi. And here they are in action prior to A New Hope at this point. So we're seeing all kinds of tributes to our to the original trilogy through their ships.
Speaking of nods to the original trilogy, I wanted to see if you guys had picked up on this moment. I think it was the first moment after they got all the new recruits together, and then they were dismissed, and Sabine takes off her helmet, and some of the other pilots start doing so as well. There's a little conversation that goes on in the background, and I wrote it down exactly because I had to play it back a couple times. But the line is, one pilot says, "What do you think of the new GG1s?" And then the other pilot goes, "Looking forward to the F-40s. That is a nod to the two stormtroopers having a conversation while Ben Kenobi is taking down
the tractor beam, right.
There's these two troopers that are having the little conversation, and he says, "So what do you think of whatever ship he mentions at the time?" And he's like, and the other one's, you know, kind of counters back about the ship. And I just thought that was an exact nod to this little side conversation just out of the blue of like, "So what do you think of this?" It was a nod to that particular moment.
Absolutely. I didn't catch that. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I missed that one too. That is dead on though, because that
it was,
I'll have to go back
because
and
it's
listen
in
to
the
it.
Background. It's in the background. It's just a momentary thing. And if you're not paying attention, you would miss it. And I was like, "Wait a minute, what did they just say?" And I had to back it up and listen to it again. I'm like, "Ah, there you go."
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those. They threw in a lot of little nods in there. Of course, we got the Top Gun theme. We got all the ships there that where it's just they're bombarding us with new ships in this episode with the interceptors coming out and the rebel transports there. So we're seeing all these new ships coming into play in this episode. But then a more subtle nod, which I got a feeling that Filoni threw this in there, is, of course, the Tom Skerritt wannabe pilot. If you noticed, his uniform, of course, was the all black, just like every other TIE fighter pilot. But his has got the orange stripe down the side for no reason. I'll just the yellow stripe down the side, which the reason I say that's Filoni thing, because, of course, we all know Filoni is from Pittsburgh and he's a big Penguins and he's a big Steelers fan. So
you definitely think he threw that in there.
It fits. I see it pop up every once in a while. I always see somewhere in the background or something that's a nod to
a little black and gold, little black and yellow.
And in this place, it was right in front of us. And definitely, I thought that was just a good nod. I was like, okay, Dave obviously did this one. I didn't even think twice about that one.
It's good to be the king.
It is good to be the king. So, speaking of kings, we are going to take a quick break and throw things to Dan and Corey so they can tell us about the top Star Wars trading app. Definitely a fun thing. So, Dan, Corey, it's all you.
If you are a huge Star Wars fan, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. And if you love collecting Star Wars, the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps is for you.
The best part, the Star Wars Card Trader app features incredible images from the original trilogy, the prequels, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and The Force Awakens. Every era you love is included on the app.
It's easy and a lot of fun, too. Beloved characters, key scenes, and unforgettable moments are in every pack. Open the app every day and get free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina, trade with your friends, and make new ones along the way as you continue to add to your Star Wars collection. And it's all free.
The variety makes it fun, too. So chase what you love. Some of the latest packs include poster series, classic comic book series, helmet variety packs, and so much more. There are even exclusive cards you can get by completing sets, as well as special inserts and even autograph opportunities. Don't worry about missing the cards you love either, as you sign up for notifications right on the app.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you, Dan and Corey. If you haven't gotten that Star Wars trading card app from Topps yet, get it. Play it. It is so much fun. Matter of fact, if you do download it and play and you need somebody to trade with, look me up. My my screen name on there or username on there is, don't laugh, it's Big Dog Stewie. It's a combination of a bunch of, a little background, it's a combination of a bunch of nicknames I had growing up. So I just combined them all into one. So,
well, if you want, I'll throw mine out there as well. Mine is DJ Mall 1031. I've been playing that app for a while. This is a good time to get in on that. I know it's not an app related show, but it's a good time to get in on that because with Rogue One coming, they are dropping new Rogue One sets. So if you want to get in on the ground floor, there you go.
Exactly.
I ran out of space on my phone, so I had to delete it.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all good. It's a fun game, and the great animation, great pictures, great artwork in the app. So download it, play it, and of course, look us up when you're in there. So let's get back to the Antilles extraction. We've talked a wide range of topics, hitting on from the spaceships to Sabine's undercover work to Ezra's dealing with being patient and not constantly being in charge and in the mix of everything. We've talked about the Top Gun influences. We've talked about Callus. But we haven't talked about the person who the episode is named after. Let's talk about Wedge Antilles.
Which me and all my brilliant observance still didn't pick up that it was Wedge until they actually said Wedge. I don't know how I didn't make that connection, but...
It's all good because it wound up being a great, great way to introduce Wedge Antilles. I mean,
yeah, it was a great reveal.
So. It was a very great reveal. I mean, once they gave us the information or gave us the clip last week at the end of Rebels Recon of that's what the upcoming episode was going to be, they told us the name Antilles Extraction. We see the little TIE fighter scene with him and Sabine in the simulator. We find out they're simulators, but he introduced himself as Wedge. Next thing you know, everybody was excited. We got Wedge Antilles. Perfect. Then they throw us an additional doggy bone because not only are they extracting Wedge, they're extracting Hobby as well. So we
and Rake. Don't forget Rake
and Rake. Yes, he did go down in a blaze of glory. He did not survive two Death Stars. He did not make it through Hoth. He never made it out of orbit of Skystrike. So, moment of silence for Rake.
Moment of silence for Rake. Like I mentioned earlier, at least it did kind of relieve my head scratching moment of going, "Hey, we got Wedge, we got Hobby, and who the heck is Rake? I don't remember that one. I'll have to look him up later." And then, you know, as we find out Rake's unfortunate fate, I realize why I don't recognize the name. So.
We'll just call Rake the nod to Star Trek red shirts everywhere.
The player to be named later. Yeah.
Exactly. Red shirt number one. So we got.
But now I'm always with the timeline because Wedge seems a little younger than I would have expected in this episode based on I figured we had a couple of years. 2 years until A New Hope at this point, or we're still – have they left that really open? You guys follow these things probably a little more than I do as far as exact timelines and stuff like that. So
it's supposed to be 5 years before at least when we started, and so I would assume we're probably at the three-year mark now, would you think?
Well,
based on Ezra's growth.
Do you remember hearing that we're – because I know there was a timeline jump. I want to say we're about – 2 years out from A New Hope in this.
And if that's the case, he does seem a little young, but I suppose, you know, Luke was only, 18 at the time. So, you know, I guess if Wedge is between 16 and 18 at this point, I guess that's probably right in line. I think, Tommy, we're just so old that we that 16 to 18 looks a lot younger than it used to.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. And maybe I'm thinking of the character in, you know, A New Hope as being maybe older than he even was in A New Hope. I might be picturing him older in my mind as the more, you know, experienced pilot. He's already been around the Rebellion for a while. Where, you know, Luke was our callow youth, you know, so Wedge was kind of the more experienced guy. So I think of him as in you know, terms that he was the older. Maybe that's just why, but maybe he's not quite as old as I think he was.
Well, I mean, I definitely understand where you're coming from in that. I mean, going back and looking at pictures of Wedge from A New Hope, especially during the trench run when he's in the X-Wing and trench run, or even at the beginning of the Battle of Yavin when they're flying up to the Death Star, and he's like, look at the size of that thing. I mean, just the look, you could tell it, there's youth in that fighter. He looks very young in compared to some of the other experienced pilots in there, like Red Leader, Gold Leader, and some of the others. So I think he proved himself to be a formidable fighter, which is why, of course, he was Red 2 in that. I believe he was Red 2 in that, wasn't he? Yeah, I believe he was Red 2. I'd have to go back to that.
I just remember Red 5. That's all I remember.
Red 5 is always standing by. So, but he was Red 2. Red 2. Yeah. So, if he's not, somebody email me and correct me.
Somebody will correct us.
Somebody will. Tweet me, email me, let me know. I admit when I'm wrong. But I do believe he was Red 2 at that point. So he definitely proved himself to be, you know, pretty much second in command of that squad at that point, even just a few years he had been in the Rebellion. So we're seeing the recruitment of somebody who survived two Death Star assaults.
Yeah, I love the idea of them bringing in, and it's interesting because I've been watching Rebels now for, you know, since the beginning, but it really just dawned on me with this particular episode, that Rebels equals Rebellion. We are seeing the birth of the Rebellion, the start of the Rebellion that we know of, that, you know, we were introduced to in A New Hope. And so, of course, it makes absolute perfect sense for them to tie in these characters that we know that were part of the Rebellion, where they came from, how they got started. So to introduce these pilots that we know from the original trilogy and show us this is where they started. They were young recruits, but they, you know, weren't really happy with the Empire. I think that's a great – it makes perfect logical sense. And to bring it in with – you know, tying it in with the Ghost crew being part of the Rebellion and recruiting them, it just kind of all makes the universe come together.
Absolutely. And it's nice to see how these pieces come together. I mean, we saw it when we all watched A New Hope for the first time. It was one of those experiences where, like, you immediately connect with these people, but then you want to know their background. And we really never found out much about Wedge's background. And to see him and Hobby come out of the same class from the academy in the manner that they escaped and were recruited is phenomenal. I mean, he even says in this episode, Wedge, when he's talking to Sabine before they decide to, or before Sabine admits who she is and she's there to get him out, that he was recruited by the Empire. All he was a cargo pilot. He was just flying shipments around. He was a UPS guy.
Right.
He was the Imperial UPS guy, is essentially what he was. Just driving shipment, taking shipments everywhere. And when they recruited him, he thought it would be more than what it was. And you could see the passion in his dialogue and even in his face through the episode as he's wanting to be more than a cog in the Imperial machine, which is what they're training him to be.
Yeah, and there's so many nods. We all know the nods throughout all of the films, really, to things like, you know, the Nazi regime, where that's what they did, is they recruited the youth. You know, they had these youth programs and bring in the brightest and the best and you know, lure them in with all these promises of all these different things. which is, you know, how Wedge and Hobby were lured in, is, you know, hey, we're going to take you from this mundane life of, you know, flying cargo ships, and we're going to make you a pilot, and we're going to make you a starfighter pilot, and, you know, all these hopes and dreams that they kind of draw them in with, only to have the disillusionment of what they're really doing.
Any type of bring back to the original movies is going to be a big attraction for the fans of the old trilogy. It's going to bring us in closer and bring us in even more. It's just one of those situations that's all over. I mean, Jeff, what did you think when we finally saw Wedge in action for the first time in this?
Oh, it didn't surprise me. That's what I'd been waiting for. I did have a question. This has nothing to do with the question you just asked me, so I'll just ask you a question. The helmets that they were wearing, are those traditional TIE fighter helmets? Because what they looked like to me was like a cross between the AT-AT driver helmet and the TIE fighter pilot helmet. Did you guys notice that at all?
Well,
maybe it was just me.
Well, from what I can, we know with Rebels, of course, they've taken a little more liberty in the designs, trying to focus back more on the designs that. Oh, my Lord, I just blanked on his name.
McQuarrie,
oh, my God. Wow, I just feel like I committed blasphemy. Wow, Ralph McQuarrie.
Start your statement over and edit. There you go.
Exactly. So we got the in this, they've gone through Rebels this whole time, going back to a lot of McQuarrie drawings from the beginning. Looking at those, that's why we see some slight design differences.
The classic part, yeah.
Exactly. We see some designs differences in the Stormtrooper helmets. We see some design differences in some of the settings are very McQuarrie influenced. I wouldn't be surprised if there that helmet was a little bit different. I personally did not notice, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a little different because of a McQuarrie inspired drawing back in the day. So
yeah, absolutely.
Very good, very well could be.
Yeah, I've noticed the exact same thing, that they're obviously borrowing very, very much from the legacy of Ralph McQuarrie with the artwork in this show, which I am all for 100%. It's fantastic, the nods that they've done to it. So if they take some liberties with, hey, this is what McQuarrie's helmet design looked like on art, it doesn't necessarily match what wound up exactly on film, we're going to go with the McQuarrie version of it. I have no problems if they take some liberties with it that way.
All right, so I guess it wasn't just me. but, you know, the one thing that I wish that we had gotten and maybe we did and I just missed it, I wish that we had gotten a little more indication of why Wedge and Hobby and Rake had finally decided that they wanted to defect.
They did mention, I just do remember the general disillusionment with, the orders that they're given to follow under the Empire, that, you know, they wanted to be pilots, but they didn't want to be, you know, ruthless.
True.
Destroyers.
Yeah, that's true. And we did get that. I just wondered if there was maybe something.
They probably could have expanded on that a little more if these episodes were longer, possibly, but.
Yeah, it never did tell us exactly why they contacted the Rebellion, because they contacted the Rebellion before arriving at Skystrike. So something happened prior to Skystrike that caused these three young men to reevaluate their lives and want to make the run.
And the obvious thing is, again, we still have, you know, several seasons, and now that they've introduced these characters, I don't think you're going to introduce a character like Wedge and not use him. So
I'll be surprised if we don't see more of him.
Yeah, he could show up again, and we might get more of that backstory.
Good point. Maybe they're just saving it, and I should be patient.
We very well may get it. Who knows? He may. I think we'll see some more of Wedge in the future.
Like I said, I don't see why you would introduce him if you don't use him.
Exactly, and I can see him being a part of a vital operation. You know, to maybe. Steal some X-Wings.
Right. There you go. And form a certain, rogue squadron, perhaps?
You never know. It could happen. So we're not saying it is. Don't take us at our word on that. We just, wishful thinking, y'all.
Wishful thinking.
But we've seen all the
throwing
other ships.
Throwing it out there for the universe. Yeah.
Bring me
out there
to
the universe. Yeah, they got to show up eventually.
Yeah, they will. They have to. They know they show up in Rogue One.
Correct me wrong. X-Wings were made out to be a very old ship anyway, so it's not like they don't exist until a certain time. They should already have been around.
You would think so. You would definitely think so. I mean, they were always considered dated ships. It was my understanding. So,
yeah, they were like a dated, outclassed ship at that point. You know, but the Rebellion, you know, picked up what they could. So that's why they were using them, and they turned out to be good, sturdy ships. But yeah, you would think we would at least see a few X-Wings here and there. But
oh, absolutely, they're coming. I'm sure they will.
I did think it was interesting that we saw more A-Wings and more Interceptors in this, and those are both two ships that we didn't see until Jedi. You know, Aaron, you mentioned that earlier, mm-hmm. that we didn't see any Interceptors until Jedi. Same with A-Wings. We didn't see any of them until we got to Jedi either.
Exactly.
Right.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I remember back when Jedi came out and all the stuff was coming about the movies, the toys, and all this and that. The A-Wing was supposed to be the fastest ship in the rebellious in the fighter fleet of the Rebellion. Am I right?
It's at least the most maneuverable. Okay. It's akin to the TIE Interceptor.
Okay, because I'm sorry, those TIE Interceptors danced circles around those A-Wings in this episode.
Right.
And
I wondered if that just had to do with the quality of the pilots.
Ah.
Because they say that they're running low on pilots, so maybe these guys are just sort of the scrubs.
Really, in the end, the ship is only as good as the person flying it, so that could be.
Very true. I never thought that did not cross my mind. So it could have been the pilots at that point. But yeah, I was very underimpressed with the A-Wing versus the Interceptor. And that makes sense. It could very well be the pilot in that situation.
Well, Matt, and even if the A-Wing is the fastest starfighter in the Rebels fleet, doesn't mean it's anywhere near, you know, what an Interceptor can do, because obviously the Empire has the more modern technology. So,
very true. Very true.
I don't know. I'm not the ship expert. I'm sure there's guys out there that have all the manuals and know which ship is faster and all those different things. And again, they can email us and tell us. So.
Oh, exactly. And please do. Absolutely. Because it was except for some reason, I remember reading somewhere that the A-Wing was developed in response to the Interceptor. So seeing it as ineffective as it kind of was in this episode had me scratching my head. But correct me if I'm wrong, somebody. Email me, please. Let me know. I'll give you credit. Just let me know. Well, let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about Rebels overall. The animation in this show, of course, from season one through now, and especially in this episode, has just, you could see a difference in the progression. It is greatly improved, and it's some of the best animation you'll find on TV right now, if not the best. And definitely it helps set and tell these stories that we watch every week. What are y'all's thoughts on the animation on this episode, on the show in general? Jeff?
You're absolutely right. It just keeps getting better. You know, when it first started, it was a step up from the Clone Wars. Clone Wars progressed as the series progressed, the animation quality progressed. But this season, I don't know, everything just seems more vibrant. It seems like the designs are cleaner, and the colors they just pop more. And everything about the show it seems like they're just firing on all cylinders. And I forget sometimes that I'm watching a cartoon, even though it's very stylized, you know, and I like the fact that it's stylized, but I forget that I'm watching a cartoon, and that's a credit to the animation along with the writing and the voice acting. And it all three is just working together. We've always had terrific voice actors. We've always had terrific scripts. The animation, the technology is finally catching up so that it feels like when we're watching a space battle, sometimes I forget that I'm not watching a film.
Absolutely. To totally jump onto what Jeff was just saying, because that's exactly my thoughts as well. It's a combination of all of the above, this amazing animation, which more and more looks film, you know, film realistic. In many, many sequences, you like you said, you don't realize you're watching a cartoon. It looks could be a Star Wars set for a film for all I know. And, you know, between that and the direction and, you know, the writing, all these things kind of coming together to make you feel, no, I'm not watching a cartoon on the Disney Channel. I'm watching a mini film. And yeah, it's impressive.
Well, yeah, it's very impressive. And it's definitely a tribute and definitely credit to these guys that worked so hard on animating this. Their work is obviously paying off because it's being discussed and noticed. I mean, these guys work tirelessly animating these shows and getting the color and the scheming and the layouts just right. And it very well, very much enhances each story told. And we are just definitely improving day after day, season after season, or episode after episode, season after season from the beginning.
I suppose the real way you notice too is especially in things where it's stuff we've seen before. Anytime they're in an empire, you know, imperial type setting with the hallways and the ships and all these different things, somebody, I look at it and I go, did somebody sit down? Like, how many screenshots did these animators have to analyze and blow up and look at with a microscope to get the detail that they're putting into these shots to make it look like they just, like, that's the movie set. That's the same set that they use for this or that, or the same ship that they use for this or that, because the detail, the minute detail is absolutely amazing to me how much work they put into that.
And if you want to get an even greater appreciation for it, go back and watch the Clone Wars movie that was released in theaters. I just watched it recently. I recorded a commentary track with a couple of the guys from Star Wars in Character a couple of weeks ago, and comparing that to what I just watched this week with the new Rebels episode, it's night and day. It's like watching
the Flintstones.
It's like watching the Flintstones and watching Rebels now. It really is that sharp of a contrast.
Interesting. Now I am going to have to go back and do that.
I'm going to have to as well. I mean, I did recently watch that movie, and definitely it's, you can tell because of its time, but definitely just thinking back to it and comparing the two, I'll just, from what I remember, because it's been about a month since I've watched it. Definitely, it's a vast improvement. We see a world of difference in animation, and it could be technological advances. I don't know, because a lot's changed in that movie's, what, 13 years old?
It's probably a combination of technological advances and budget.
I don't know about budget.
I'm just saying, if a show is doing, if in general with TV shows, they start out with a lower budget, and if the show does well, they tend to get more money that they can use to improve the show. That's just in general with TV. So if that's the case as well with, you know, things like Rebels. Now we know, you know, Disney's got a bankroll probably the size of, you know, a small country, so they can afford these things.
Or a large country.
Yeah. Or a large country.
Exactly.
A very large country. You know, that they can afford these things, but at the same time, it is all about budget and money. And it's like, okay, we're going to give you X amount of dollars to do this show, and you got to get the job done. If the show turns a profit, we'll give you more money. So,
and it very well could be. I don't think I would attribute much to budget, just because sheer fact, because it was when Clone Wars was being done, Lucas was in charge of the clone, when George Lucas was in charge of Clone Wars, and it was always said that he did not care what they spent on Clone Wars. He pretty much gave them a blank check to run with and play with, because it was expanding his world. Whereas Disney's, this is your budget, make it work. And which is why there, if you look at Clone Wars compared to Rebels, there is some difference in the animation styles that they use between the two series. But they're both at the top of their industry. Clone Wars was a war. It was phenomenal then. Rebels is phenomenal now. It's the best animation on TV. That has not changed. But I think it's more a tribute to the guys they have working on it versus the guys and gals they have working on it, rather than the size of the budget.
And as we said, also, you know, just as technology, every year it changes and grows and becomes more, and they can do more and more with it. So that's obviously a factor as well. It's always going to be a factor. 5 years from now, we're going to be going, these episodes are so much more phenomenal than what they did five years ago. You know, so that's just the way that's just the way it's going to be.
Oh, absolutely. Very much. Definitely. And the animation was phenomenal. Chris Kiner did another killer soundtrack for another for this episode. The guy just keeps acing himself week after week. So, I mean,
I absolutely love the soundtrack for Rebels. Every time I hear the music, they really do a brilliant job, and it's hard to kind of just pin it down. But I think the thing I like the most about the soundtrack is he borrows just enough from the classic themes and hits those at the right moments where they work the best, but he's not copycatting John Williams. You know, obviously he has to use some of those classic original themes every once in a while, but they use them where they fit. They don't overdo it. So it's really a very fine blend there that they do, and they make that work. They don't overkill it, but they don't ignore it. They do a great job with that.
Yeah, and when he does use those Williams themes, it's almost more of a tribute than to set the scene.
Right.
And it's very much a nod to the phenomenal work Williams had done for years in Star Wars.
And they use them in the right moments. They don't use them just to use them. Oh, we have to fit this in here. We have to throw in X amount of, you know, original John Williams scores references in this episode. No, they use them where they fit, and that's where it's key.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and Tilly's extraction was a great episode all around. Definitely a lot of great stuff came out of this episode, a lot of great nods. Let's go into our final thoughts on this episode, and we'll start with you, Jeff, on that. What are your final thoughts on the Antilles extraction?
This is what I wanted from this show from the beginning. I wanted it to be a bridge between the Clone Wars and the original trilogy, and I wanted origin stories of peripheral characters like Wedge and Hobby. This is exactly what I wanted from the show. So I love this episode. I can't get enough of it. I'll probably go back and watch it again tonight before I go to bed. Just really enjoyed it. And my favorite moment that we didn't talk about was that had two. He's asking her what at some point Wedge asked Sabine what the plan was now. She goes, I guess we'll see. And he says, are you kidding me? She says, welcome to the rebellion. Because they never have a plan beyond, you know, two steps ahead of where they are. And when she rescued them from their jail cell, and he says, we're just coming to rescue you. And she goes, that's cute. Listen, we got to go. I just loved her line reading. And it's that sort of humor that we're getting that just reminds me that, oh, yeah, this is Star Wars. And it's just a lot of fun. And I hope that we get more like this season, because this is exactly what I was hoping we were going to get.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought those scenes up, because those were definitely some great moments. And I don't know if you noticed, because we didn't see Sabine, and we didn't talk about this, and we're going to go off for a second real quick. We see Sabine influence Wedge, because on the bridge when they're talking, she's, how are we going to get out of here? She's like, I'll let you know when I figure that out. And she takes off. Welcome to the rebellion. That line you just talked about. When Wedge and Hobby are sitting in the prison and Sabine's about to be tortured, for all they know, next door, they're looking at what's going on next door, and they see, of course, trying to figure out how they're going to escape, and Wedge is pacing the floor, we got to help her, she's in this because of us, we got to help her. And Hobby's like, well, what's your plan? What are we going to do? And he's like, I'll let you know when I figure it out.
Right.
Goes right back into that mix there. So definitely we got some a lot of action in that influencing of Wedge by Sabine, which is nice to see. Back to final thoughts though, Tommy, what do you got? What are your final thoughts on this Antilles extraction?
Well, I'm mirroring once again Jeff and his comments, because that's exactly my same thoughts. Is again, as I mentioned earlier, really, this season is where it's kind of making that connection for me. Not that it hasn't been hinted in the past, you know, they've been building the past two seasons, but really this season is making that connection of the name of the show, Rebels, building the rebellion. And that's where it's all coming into play. And these things that we've been seeing over the past couple episodes, you know, recruiting the Y-wings in the previous episodes, and now we're recruiting pilots, and we're getting, you know, all these different forces coming together to join the rebellion. And even the hint of Kallus at the end, and the point you brought up of maybe he's swinging towards joining the rebellion as well. It's all coming together with episodes like this of, you know, making it about the beginnings and the origins of the rebellion. So again, that is what really excites me as well, and to where that's going to go in the future.
All I could say is ditto, because I 100% agree with both of you. This is from the beginning, when Rebels was announced, and talk about leading up to the rebellion and a New Hope. This was what we wanted to see. This is what I wanted to see. I wanted to see these tie-ins to A New Hope. I wanted to see these characters from A New Hope showing up in Rebels, how they came about, what their backstory was. And this is what we wanted. This is what we were looking for. So definitely, I loved it. It fit me perfectly, made me happy. I was grinning ear to ear through the whole episode. Great job. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Overall, grade the episode A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever you want to. But let's go over grade the episode. We'll start with you, Tommy. How would you grade this episode of Rebels?
I'm gonna give it a B plus, only because, and going back to some things that you guys had mentioned earlier, you know, they did seem to have to squeeze a few things and rush getting Wedge and the crew in there. But we'll get that story that we're looking for in future episodes. But B plus, really solid, great story, great episode.
Perfect. B plus from Tommy. How about you, Jeff?
I think it's an A for me. This is the best episode we've gotten in a while from the show. Really, since it's the best episode so far this season, the one I enjoyed the most. And it's one of my favorite episodes we've gotten so far. I get what Tommy is talking about. It's not perfect, but it's so much fun. And
I had to find one nitpicky thing.
I get it. And you're not wrong, but it's so well paced. It just it feels like Star Wars. That's the highest compliment I can pay anything, is it feels like Star Wars.
And it definitely does feel like Star Wars. It was definitely a great episode. A lot of highlights, a lot of great things, a lot of comedy that just brings us right back to the original trilogy. For me, you know, it was hard to grade this because there was so much great stuff in it. To me, it was a great episode. Wasn't the best that I've seen so far, but it was definitely a great episode. I was going to go with an A- on it. Definitely a good episode. I did enjoy it. Some great things in there. I loved seeing Wedge come into play. Love seeing him interact with Sabine. And Sabine undercover, man, that was just killer. She definitely has some history, and we're going to see a lot of her story this season as it goes on.
She's another character that's maturing over the seasons as well. And I'm going to be really curious to see where her character, you know, what level she matures to of, you know, in the rebellion, and what form of leadership role she takes, because she's kind of exploring that option as well.
Exactly. And we'll see her growth a lot. I know there's some Mandalorian episodes coming up this season, which we'll find out a lot more about Sabine's history and her background. So definitely we're looking forward to that. With that, I have an announcement for this episode, so sit back. We are doing our first Rebels Reaction giveaway since I have taken over. I don't know if Dan and Corey did one before, but I'm doing one now. I have, sitting right in front of me, one of the newly released Sabine Wren 3¾-inch action figures.
Nice!
It is sitting right here, and it is going to go home with somebody.
Dibs. Oh wait, you meant
dibs. Sorry.
Unfortunately, of course, with the contest rules,
you're giving away action figures with two collectors on board.
Hey, you know what? It happens. It happens. Of course, the rules that for the show, for all giveaways, of course, do apply. Unfortunately, Coffee with Kenobi family don't apply. It's not going to apply to you guys. But our listeners definitely have a chance to win this fantastic 3 3/4 inch figure of Sabine Wren. You'll see pictures of it in the show notes that will be available here on our website at coffeewithkenobi.com, so check it out. And if you want to win this figure, all you have to do to be entered in the drawing is go to coffeewithkenobi.com. Find the show notes for this episode, The Antilles Extraction, and comment there on the site and let us know what you thought about the episode. Everybody who comments, of course, will be entered in a drawing, and that random drawing will be held. And will be held. You have till the next episode airs. So, of course, this we'll have some time to get that done. This once this posts, you'll have till the you'll have a full week, full 7 days once this posts to get your name in the hat for this drawing. Once that's done, of course, we will announce that on a future show. Okay, so get your name in the hat. Comment on the show notes there at coffeewithkenobi.com for the Antilles Extraction. Be entered in, and this 3 3/4 inch gorgeous Sabine Wren action figure could be yours.
And don't forget to comment and tell us what the difference between a TIE Interceptor and the A-Wing is.
Exactly. Leave us the feedback. If we got it wrong, correct us and let us know. Or if we were not 100% correct, but we were way going down the right path.
We were like way out there.
If we're in another galaxy far, far away, just let us know.
Come on, geeks.
We'll come back.
Come on, geeks. Help us out. Give us the info.
All right. Perfect. Well, Tommy, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us in this episode. Let's go ahead and touch base real quick with how people can contact you if they want to continue this discussion off the air or just talk Star Wars in general with you. Jeff, how can somebody get a hold of you?
How can they not get in touch with me? For those of you who don't know, I also am the founder of Marvin Dog Media, my own podcast network, and I've got several shows over there, one of which is Talking Toys with Taylor and Jeff, that my buddy Taylor and I discuss vintage toys. And I have another show called Bantha Banter, which Aaron has been on. Tommy has not been on yet. Hint, hint.
Yes.
We've taken an unscheduled hiatus, but we're coming back in a big way fairly soon. That's MarvinDogMedia.com. We have a Twitter handle at MarvinDogMedia, all one word. If you want to get in touch with me directly, I'm at the Jeff McGee, T-H-E, Jeff McGee. You can also check me out on Assembly of Geeks every Wednesday. Comics with Kenobi once a month, the first Friday of the month, unless it's a week like last week when the show didn't actually get recorded and it's coming out a week late. I also have a blog on Coffee with Kenobi that I'm planning to get back to fairly shortly as well.
Perfect. Perfect. I think we all need to get back to our blog too. I've been behind on mine too, but hopefully that will correct this month. How about you, Tommy? How do I want to get a hold of you?
As I said last time, right now everything's kind of on hiatus, but I'm trying to get my feet back into things and dip my toes back in. And for the moment, I'm going to comment on any of the podcasts and different things I'm involved with on, you know, Coffee with Kenobi and all the other pages. And you'll see my name, Tommy Mac, in the links. And, you know, you can yell at me through there. And as I get back into things with you guys, I appreciate you really letting me be a part of it. I have so much fun with it. And I'm looking forward to kind of just getting my things are slowing down for me with work. So you never know. You're going to see me around a little bit more.
Awesome. That's wonderful to hear, Tommy. Wonderful to hear. And definitely I'm glad you've been able to join us too. You too, Jeff. Of course, let us know what you think. To enter the contest, go to the website, enter your comments in the show notes. If you want to comment more directly, we have, of course, our email, rebelsreactions at coffeewithkenobi.com. We're on Twitter at Rebel Reactions. If you want to just get a hold of me personally, at TAHarris121079 on Twitter. And, of course, to email me, it's aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. So a lot of great ways to get a hold of us. And check out Coffee with Kenobi's website. Got a lot of great stuff. A lot of great bloggers blogging at that website. That done daily, constantly got blogs going up. going on there. We got some great podcasts on there besides Rebels Reactions. Of course, we have Jeff's show with Matt. Of course, Comics with Kenobi. We have, of course, Lattes with Leia. We have Legends Library if you like the Legends series of books. And, of course, it all started with our flagship show, our namesake, Coffee with Kenobi, Dan Corey, there to check them all out. Listen, enjoy, subscribe there through iTunes or wherever you're podcasts are grabbed from. Jeff, Tommy, Lifesavers, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I do greatly appreciate it. Definitely
not a problem.
I appreciate it. Y'all were awesome. Definitely have to get y'all back on again in the future. And of course,
absolutely. I appreciate you having me. And you know, I'm sure you want to rotate some people around and let other people get in on the discussion, but whenever you need somebody to chat Star Wars, I'm more than happy to help.
Awesome.
Yeah, what he said.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Rebels Reactions. Again, I'm Aaron Harrison. Remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.